Good morning to you. I'm Veronica Rickert, sitting in today for Kathleen Dunn here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Remember when a peanut butter and jelly sandwich was the taste of childhood? Well, these days, peanuts are banned from a lot of classrooms, and childhood allergies to wheat, soy, dairy, and fish seem to be reaching epic proportions, too. Media reports in the last year have included stories about death by allergens. In one well-reported incident, a teenager allegedly died after kissing her boyfriend, who had eaten a peanut butter sandwich earlier in the day. But does science bear out the growing food allergy alarm? Our guest today says studies of food allergies in children are often biased and are conducted by special interest groups and exaggerated as well. So what do you think? Has everyone gone nuts, or is there a real threat there? Are your children allergic to things like peanuts and wheat, and how seriously do you take it? Come along and join in the conversation this hour at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234, and please note it's a different number because we are broadcasting from Madison. Well, our guest this hour is Meredith Broussard. She wrote the article, Everyone's Gone Nuts, The Exaggerated Threat of Food Allergies, for the January issue of Harper's Magazine. Meredith Broussard, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Can you paint a picture for us of just how alarmed parents actually are about the threat posed by food allergies?
Well, kids with food allergies are often segregated in school cafeterias. You have nut-free cafeteria tables. You have parents who are afraid to send their children on play dates because they're afraid that other parents are not going to be cautious and are going to feed their child something that has a hidden danger in it. And then, in turn, you have all this anxiety being passed on to the children. So, to me, the situation has really sort of reached a crisis point.
And who is telling the parents to be so cautious? Are they doing this on their own, or are there physicians out there who are sort of getting out the word that you do have to be really, really careful?
Well, the message is coming from physicians, and it's also coming from these nonprofits and local parents groups devoted to food allergy awareness. The largest one is a group called the Food Allergy and Anaphylaxis Network, which is based in Fairfax, Virginia. They were among the first, and interestingly, the CEO of the Food Allergy and Anaphylaxis Network is also the author of a lot of the statistical and journalistic coverage of food allergy disasters.
So we're talking about a pretty big conflict of interest right there, right?
It seems like a pretty large conflict of interest to me.
Well, how come no one is talking about this?
Looking at the medical side of things, it requires going through medical journals, which are, first of all, not accessible to your everyday reader. It costs money to get reprints, or you have to be associated with a research library, medical school, what have you. So this information is kind of hard to get to. The other thing is it's dreadfully difficult to read. And if you can read a story in Newsweek called Kids and the Growing Food Allergy Threat, or you can read something in the Journal of Allergy and Clinical Immunology, it's a no-brainer which one you're going to pick.
So parents are believing what they hear, but what about the threat, the ultimate fear of every parent, that their child will encounter one of these food allergens and will die? What are the statistics? Are there many children out there who are dying or being hospitalized from these food allergens?
Well, first of all, it is every parent's worst fear. And as a parent, I'm absolutely terrified of anything happening to my child. It's my worst nightmare. On the other hand, when I went and looked up the statistics, the CDC only records 12 deaths from all food allergies in the last year that we have data available for. And actually, almost four times as many people died from being struck by lightning.
Do you know if the fact that peanuts are no longer served on most airplanes has to do with all of this?
That question is sort of what got me started on this on this investigation because a friend of mine came home from a trip complaining that there had been an announcement on his airplane that there was a peanut allergic person on the plane, and not only were they not serving peanuts, but people were requested not to eat things on the plane that contained peanuts or had been manufactured in a facility that processes peanuts. And my friend was sort of all up in arms. So I looked into it, and it turns out that the idea that people could be in trouble with peanuts on planes goes back to a medical journal publication in 99 called Self-Reported Allergic Reactions to Peanut on Commercial Airliners. So it's not hard medical data. It's just people saying that they felt anxious around peanuts.
Well, you can see why they would feel anxious in a way. If you're told that a fleck of peanut is going to, you know, send you to the hospital, you'd be terrified. It seems like in tons of settings, including grocery stores and parties and, you know, I guess airplanes.
Oh, yeah. I mean, flying is an incredibly nerve-wracking experience in the first place. Like, of course it triggers all of your anxieties. But on the other hand, I mean, just because it triggers anxieties doesn't necessarily mean that we should, you know, change corporate behavior.
I have to say I miss peanuts. I'd hate to give someone a hard time who is peanut allergic, but I have to say the pretzels, there just doesn't seem to cut it for me. But I understand if it's a big deal to some people. And maybe just the fear factor is the biggest deal, it sounds like, what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, people are absolutely terrified of peanuts. We have reports of kids who are peanut allergic who say that they're afraid of dying in the supermarket because they know that peanuts are nearby. And to me, I mean, that's sad.
So you're essentially saying you've researched this and you're saying that really doesn't happen, or the chances of that happening, as far as you can tell, are pretty astronomical.
As far as anybody knows, food allergy deaths are not a significant public health risk at this point. The estimate that that the Food Allergy and Anaphylaxis Network uses is that 150 to 200 people die every year of food allergies, and that estimate comes from a study of a small town in Minnesota, in rural Minnesota, which is not sound epidemiology. And then the CDC, which tracks all of the deaths, all the 2.4 million deaths that happen in the U.S. in our population of 300 million. The CDC, they just don't have records of people dying in large numbers from food allergies.
But is the fact that anyone at all is dying, should that make us back up sort of, not the fear, if there's a culture of fear surrounding it, but at least try to be a little more conscientious? And maybe it's okay to give up peanuts, and maybe it's okay to ban peanuts and other foods from classrooms if anyone at all is dying.
Well, I mean, this comes down to your individual tolerance, really. I mean, I'm not, you know, clearly I'm not, like, saying that, I'm not making a policy suggestion, although I am personally kind of skeptical about this Food Allergy and Anaphylaxis Management Act that's before Congress right now. And, you know, not all deaths are preventable is the unfortunate thing. Like, everybody dies from something. And when we have 40,000 people a year dying from transportation accidents, and we have 12 people dying from food allergies, and we have four times as many people dying from being struck by lightning as dying from food allergies, well, I mean, it's a question of where do we put our priorities.
What was it that you just mentioned that was before Congress?
There's something called the Food Allergy and Anaphylaxis Management Act that was discussed in the last Congress, and I believe it's going to be on the legislative slate in the next session.
And what is it that they're hoping for?
They're hoping to put legislation in place that that legislates things like peanut-free cafeteria tables. We actually do already have something nationally on food allergies. That's called the Food Allergy Labeling and Consumer Protection Act that was passed a couple of years ago. And so if you remember a few years ago, you started seeing labels on food that said, you know, contains peanuts or processed in a facility that Also processes, nuts, or, you know, a package of cream cheese, we'll say, contains dairy. That's because of the Food Allergy Labeling Consumer Protection Act that was actually passed by due to lobbying by the Food Allergy and Anaphylaxis Network.
And that group looms pretty large in the public consciousness over food allergies. What sorts of things are they trying to promote besides the labeling of foods?
Well, there's the labeling of foods. They're actually, I mean, they're a remarkable group, and they've been remarkably successful. Like, I do have a lot of respect for them in terms of their success at getting their agenda accepted nationally. So they have been involved in the legislation that has passed in several states about food allergen-free cafeteria tables. They've been involved in getting ambulance drivers, EMTs, to carry epinephrine injectors for allergic reactions. They were involved in the Food Allergy Label and Consumer Protection Act. They've drafted this Food Allergy and Anaphylaxis Management Act. And actually, the there's an expert panel that advises the Secretary of Health. And the FAN medical board members and also the FAN CEO are on that board. So they're actually involved at the highest levels of government.
Well, we've talked a lot about peanuts because they seem to be sort of the biggest food that people are aware of. What other foods are part of this growing worry about food allergies?
People are also worried about wheat, soy, fish, shellfish, peanuts, and tree nuts.
I've heard, as far as wheat goes, that allergic reactions to wheat are really overdiagnosed in this country. I don't know if this is true, but we just returned from a trip to New Zealand, and on every menu there was a wheat-free option. It seems as though wheat allergy consciousness is a lot higher, at least in New Zealand, which I hadn't expected to see, because it seems as though we're pretty on top of the food allergy things here. Is that one growing here as well?
Yeah, wheat allergy seems to be much more in the public consciousness right now. A lot of people are being diagnosed with celiac disease. There's sort of controversy about whether celiac disease is real. And I've actually also seen a lot of research and preoccupation with food allergies coming out of the UK and also out of Australia. Yeah.
Well, you're a mom. I don't know how old your child or children are, but what sort of sense do you get about how parents are feeling about this food allergy awareness that's going on right now? Do they think that it's gone too far or not far enough?
Well, I think it depends on the individual parent. I have food allergies myself, and so I was extremely worried when my son was an infant, and I was starting to give him food for the first time. And from everything I read, I was pretty convinced that I was going to feed him something, and he was going to have an allergic reaction to it. I wasn't going to know about it. His throat would close up, and he would die. And I used to go to this this breastfeeding support group. And at the group, you would hear things like there would be a mom with a PhD, or like a mom who was a successful entrepreneur and ran her own company. And these moms would say things like, "Well, you know, the first time I give my kid peanut butter, I'm going to do it in the waiting room of the emergency room at our local hospital." I mean, so these were the messages that I was getting, and I mean, I reacted like, you know, like anybody would. I mean, I got all of this anxiety about it until I actually looked into it and found out that the risks of dying from a food reaction are pretty rare.
Well, we're going to take a quick break right now, and then we'll come back and take calls from listeners. We're talking with Meredith Broussard, who wrote the article "Everyone's Gone Nuts: The Exaggerated Threat of Food Allergies" for the January issue of Harper's Magazine. Hope you'll join in the conversation and let us know what you think. Maybe you have a child who's allergic, maybe you don't, but how do you feel about the extra precautions that seem to be taken pretty widespread now in schools, on airplanes, to protect people with food allergies? Is it too much? Have we gone too far? Or is it good science and it just makes sense to take care of the people who have these allergies? Call us with your thoughts this morning at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. I'm Veronica Rickard, sitting in today for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. After 11 o'clock today, Jim Packard is in for Larry Mueller, and Jim will get the latest on Apple and Macintosh computers and accessories. His guest is professional Mac support specialist Joe Rhodes of Madison. Veronica Rickard back with you this morning on the Ideas Network. We're talking about the food allergy scare and the consciousness raising that's gone on with that. It seems as though everyone's aware of the danger posed by food allergies. And our guest this hour wonders whether it's gone too far. She's the author of the article, Everyone's Gone Nuts, The Exaggerated Threat of Food Allergies. She wrote that for the January issue of Harper's Magazine. And Meredith Broussard, we have callers on the line waiting to talk to you. So here is Kathy from River Falls. Hi, Kathy, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I've got actually quite a few comments, but I'm going to limit this to two. I really feel that this guest is very cavalier. Your comment, I actually wrote it down, everybody dies from something. Oh, my. That is quite cavalier about something that is preventable. I was born in 1959 with severe allergies. I was so sensitive to peanut as a child that if I sat down in the cafeteria with my lunch and if somebody was eating peanut butter nearby or if someone, a child, had peanut butter on their fingers, got it on the table, I picked it up on my hands and got it on my food, my throat would my lips, mouth, and throat would swell to the point where breathing was difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the numbers for people who actually die may be small,
mm-hmm.
but there are many more situations short of death that are quite serious.
Mm-hmm.
I was never without Benadryl. In those days, Benadryl was the option of choice when my throat would start to swell shut. And I was very sensitive to being around people that ate peanuts. Just someone eating peanut and then having a conversation. When you can smell anything, actually, it's in your system. That's how our bodies are built, that if you smell it, it's in you. And so just smelling people eating peanut butter or just getting residue from their fingers from eating peanuts is serious. I now carry an EpiPen. And then if your child had this sensitivity, I don't think you'd be so cavalier as to say everybody dies from something. I was pretty shocked by that. But I have other allergies, fish, shellfish, cow's milk, and so forth. And if my not eating peanuts on a plane would prevent a child from having a life-threatening attack, golly, I don't think that's too much to ask. You know, get over it, eat something else. also, overexposure to any food, including peanuts, can create an allergy. Folks that maybe come home and have a Bloody Mary after work every day may find, just depending on their genetic makeup, may find that they become allergic to that tomato juice. So you feed your kid peanut butter every day, and they can develop an allergy to it. And then the second part to my comment is I'd like to know, I'm kind of cynical, I guess, if this speaker has any connection with the peanut industry. You had mentioned a conflict of interest with an expert that wrote a book and had a foundation. That's not a conflict of interest, so long as it's open. That is an expert who is a published expert and then who starts a foundation to help educate other people about that form of expertise.
Well, it wasn't a book. It's that they had, it wasn't they had written a book. It was that they had conducted the research.
Okay, well,
that.
That's somebody then teaching about their research. That's not a conflict of interest. You've got that kind of, that's not exactly clear. But I'd also like to know if this guest has any connection with the peanut industry or nut industry, any employment or any funding or any other connection.
Well, thank you, Kathy. Let's see what Meredith Broussard has to say, and maybe you can stay on the line in case
yes,
she wants
I
to
will.
Follow
thank
up.
You.
Thank you.
Okay, well, Kathy, let me start with the conflict of interest issue. I don't have any connection with the peanut industry. I don't have any conflict of interest. I'm a mom. My kid doesn't have any allergies, but I do actually. I have lifelong food allergies. And, I mean, some of them are quite severe. I've actually had to use an EpiPen because my own throat closed up. You know, I've had to go, seek medical help for, get an adrenaline injection from the doctor after an allergic reaction. So, I mean, I've been there. I've been there. It's scary. But the thing is, it's just that, it's scary. But we have good medical care in this country. As far as the smelling and allergic reactions issue goes, a lot of people think that this is the case, that if you smell something, you can have an allergic reaction to it. But in fact, in order to have an allergic reaction to inhaling peanuts on an airplane, for example, what you would have to do is pulverize the peanuts and put them into an aerosol delivery device and then spray them directly into your nose and mouth in order to, absorb it into your system. So it's definitely possible to have psychosomatic reactions to smells when you have this this severe allergy, but as far as the actual immunological response of the allergy, you really have to eat something or absorb it through one of your mucous membranes in order to trigger an immune response.
Kathy, does that answer some of your questions?
Could I make an additional comment?
Mm-hmm, sure.
This speaker is dead wrong on inhaling pulverized peanuts. I'm sorry, but a child and an infant does not have a psychosomatic reaction. And actually, even if you want to label it that, that is still a physical manifestation to the stimuli. Smelling is absorbing. I don't think you know enough about that particular subject. If you can smell something, it is in your system, and your nose is a mucous membrane. There are people who are that sensitive. I am one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And because you are not, I think it's very, I am not sure why you're even motivated to make so light of this. Just because you don't experience it, there are people that do, and calling them psychosomatic, I think, is incredibly callous. Your second really callous remark, and I'm shocked. I am really searching for your motivation in having that attitude. But smelling is absorbing, and for an infant to have a psychosomatic reaction, I don't know. I have relatives that had witnessed my allergic reaction, even in infancy, to various things, and I don't think that argument holds up.
Well, thank you for your call, Kathy.
Okay.
I'm going to move along
to
other callers now,
thank you.
I'll be interested to see if other people agree with Kathy or if they think that, agree with the guest, that perhaps things have gone too far in terms of fear of food allergies. And we'll take another phone call now. This one comes from Robert in Shawano. Hi, Robert, go ahead.
Hi. I totally disagree with your last caller. I've been allergic to shellfish since I was a baby. I'm almost 40 now. I was taught by my parents at a young age, this is what you do to avoid these problems. This is what you're going to do to avoid having any allergic reactions to these things. This is how you're going to eat your food. This is how, when you go to restaurants, this is how you're going to conduct yourself, basically. And I have found that I think it's the parents nowadays are teaching kids to be fearful. I don't go to a supermarket and worry whether I'm going to die because shrimp is in the fresh seafood case. I don't worry that it's in frozen packages. When I go to restaurants that they cook like on Mongolian barbecues, I basically tell them my problem. They clean it off for me. I think it's all about the people are creating these fears that live within children now, and they grow up thinking this. And I believe it's creating a whole generation of hypochondriacs. That's all I have to say.
All right. Thank you. Thanks
You're
for the
welcome.
Call, Robert. And Meredith Broussard, do you want to respond to that?
Yeah. I mean, Robert, that's a very insightful comment. I also have a friend who's very allergic to shellfish, and when we go out to the Korean barbecue, they have the pits where you cook in the middle of the table, and so one end of the table will get the platter with the meat. And the other end of the table will get the platter with the meat and the fish and the shellfish. And my shellfish allergic friend, she just sits at the other end of the table. That's how you handle it. I think that parents should be teaching their kids not about terror, like not about fear of food, but just about reasonable precautions. You know? I mean, everybody eats.
I guess one thing I've wondered is with peanuts, whether the impression I've gotten is that an allergic reaction to a peanut, say, could be more dire and life-threatening than, say, you know, you're in the room with a cat and you have mm-hmm. a cat allergy. I never hear people worrying as much about cat allergies. Mm-hmm. Is there any truth to that? Are people who are allergic to peanuts, like our first caller, Kathy, do they tend to have more severe reactions? Or are we talking about, does it just vary along the spectrum?
Everybody's allergic reactions are different. And food allergies are different from environmental allergies. So your cat allergy is different than your shellfish allergy, primarily because people grow out of food allergies. Most people grow out of their childhood food allergies. For example, by age 10, the incidence among children drops to that of the adult population. So generally what you do to treat a childhood food allergy is you just avoid that food for a couple of years and the allergy goes away. And I mean, really don't know why. We don't know what causes food allergies. We don't know what makes them go away, but we know that avoidance takes care of it. So, you know, we just avoid things and then kids grow out of it and, you know, we go along our way. As far as the peanut allergy being more severe, mm-hmm. There isn't really any good data supporting the idea that peanuts are somehow different from other foods in terms of the reactions that they cause. We have a lot more publicity about peanut allergies.
Why is that? That's what I'm trying to figure out. Why is there so much more publicity about the peanut?
Well, my own theory is that the peanut is kind of a weird thing. Okay.
The weird thing theory.
Yeah, it's the weird thing theory. I mean, peanuts are everywhere. I mean, we eat something like 5 pounds of peanuts a year, according to the National Peanut Federation. And I'd have to double check that number. But peanut products, peanut oil, peanut derivatives, like they're in a lot of stuff that we eat. The way that high fructose corn syrup is in a lot of what we eat. So we eat a lot more peanuts than you'd ever expect. But also, way back in the mid-90s, when reports of severe food allergic reactions started showing up in the medical literature, we did have one case report of somebody who had severe anaphylaxis related to eating a peanut product. And I think that this perception just ballooned because we had this one case report, and then other people started reporting on other people or other patients that they had who had problems with peanuts. And so it just happened to be the thing that we talk about.
Interesting. Well, we'll go back to the phones now, and here is a call from Michael in Green Bay. Hi, Michael. You're on the air.
Hello. I'm a pediatrician, and I've been practicing for 30 years, and I heard the speaker make the comment that it's not known if celiac disease is real, mm-hmm. and I can guarantee it's real, and I don't know if...
Michael, we're having a little trouble. I'll try to bring you up once more. Maybe you could go to a spot where you have some good reception. Let's try once more.
Can you hear me?
Now you're okay. Go ahead.
Okay. There was a national meeting conducted by the National Institutes of Health in Washington, D.C. in 2004, where the researchers from around the world presented their evidence on celiac disease. And the mission of the meeting was to spread the word amongst medical providers that celiac disease is underdiagnosed. Now, that's a more subtle form of immune problem. It's a delayed hypersensitivity, but it certainly is real. And if your speaker makes the statement that she doesn't know if it's real, I have to question any other statements she makes.
Yeah. Well, Michael, my statement was that in the literature and the popular press, it's been questioned whether celiac disease is real. I absolutely think that food allergies are real. I mean, I think that they, I think they're real. I think they cause suffering. I mean, it is, it's miserable having food allergies, and being the parent of a child with food allergies is, I mean, it's a miserable, anxiety-producing experience.
Okay, thank you for the call, Michael. And again, he was talking about celiac disease, which is something I'd only heard of recently. It's the mm-hmm. allergy to wheat, which we're seeing more and more people discussing. And just from personal experience, acupuncturists seem to talk a lot about celiac, maybe not disease, but at least allergies to wheat, anecdotally, of course, for me. But that seems to be another disease or allergy, which seems to be on the rise in consciousness, at least. So thank you for the call, Michael. And we take a call now from Mark in Kenosha. Hi, Mark. Go ahead.
Hi. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I'm a chef by trade. I own my own little restaurant down here in Kenosha, and I've worked in just about every capacity of food service you can imagine, from 4-star dining restaurants to child care services, working with the food there. And I can tell you that the statement that was made earlier about, you know, the grinding up the peanuts and injecting them directly into your nose, for instance, that's a complete fallacy. The fact of the matter is that if you can smell the peanut, there is dust of the peanut in the air. That's what's causing you to have the ability to smell the peanut. I've had children who would bring in at the child care center that I worked at, children would bring in baked goods, for instance, from the grocery store bakery. Okay, and without even opening the box, a child in the room who would symptomize at anaphylactic state from peanuts and or other nuts just being present in the room would begin to have a reaction.
Hmm.
You know, another point of view.
What kind of reaction, if I can interrupt you, Mark, what kind of reaction are we talking about? You know, the kind of thing, like, again, with a cat where you would have a runny nose and be a little inconvenience. Are you talking about like a severe reaction?
They would enter the precursors of anaphylactic shock.
Hmm.
I mean, we had one child we had to actually administer an EpiPen to within 5 minutes of a box of cupcakes coated with a frosting made from peanut oil.
Hmm, interesting.
Okay, and all that happened is the box of cupcakes came into the room.
Wow.
They didn't come into contact with the child at all, you know. Another, you know, the celiac disease. I deal with that a lot in my little restaurant, because I have, you know, 90% of my customers are over the age of 60, and a lot of them have recently discovered that I don't know if you're familiar with the symptoms of celiac disease, but a lot of it is lethargy, a lack of focus and concentration, and it all really stems down just to the mild allergy reaction to a sensitivity of wheat. We have a lot of our seniors that come in and want to cut back on the wheat or the gluten in their diet for either the celiac disease or for diabetes, because that's another issue with the wheat glutens, is that it has an effect on diabetes, as the wheat turns directly into carbohydrates and affects your sugar levels.
Interesting. Well, thank you for the call, Mark. We're going to take a response from Meredith Broussard when we come back from a little break here. We're talking about food allergies and whether or not they are exaggerated. We've heard from many people who say that they're not, and that the consequences are dire if you don't take them seriously. What about you? Do you have a child who's allergic, and do you think that the threat is exaggerated, or do you find that we're doing what we need to do to take care of people? Hope you'll call us this hour and tell us what you think at 1-800-642-1234. And again, we are broadcasting from Madison, so that's different than the usual Milwaukee number. It's 1-800-642-1234. I'm Veronica Rickard in today for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up at 11:45, Jim Packard is in for Larry Mueller. After 11:45, Jim discusses Wisconsin rail safety issues with State Commissioner of Railroads, Rodney Cronin. So that's coming up at 11:45 here on the Ideas Network. Veronica Rickard sitting in today for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we're talking this hour with guest Meredith Broussard, who wrote the article, "Everyone's Gone Nuts, the Exaggerated Threat of Food Allergies, for the January issue of Harper's Magazine. And Meredith, we left off with a caller who was a chef there and said he had seen firsthand the dangers of food allergies, and thought we'd see what you wanted to respond to that caller.
Yeah, I mean, we have a lot of anecdotal stories about, oh, yeah, I know somebody who had this reaction one time, or, oh, I saw somebody who had an allergic reaction to smelling something or eating something hidden. And, I mean, allergic reactions, they vary, and not all of them are severe. I mean, or not all of them are life-threatening. Many of them are quite severe. But it sort of comes down to what do you call, like, what's your definition of severe, which varies from person to person. Is it two symptoms? Like, is it hives plus an itchy mouth? Is it trouble breathing? And anybody who has asthma can tell you that, you know, trouble breathing, like, you, it sort of is on a continuum. Sometimes, like, you feel like you're going to choke to death, and other times, you know, you're just sort of wheezy. As far as a precursor to anaphylactic shock, something important to note is that not all allergic reactions progress to anaphylactic shock. Anaphylactic shock is pretty rare. I talked to one emergency room physician in one of the major trauma centers here on the East Coast, and she said that, yes, she sees anaphylactic shock, but it's far more common for her to see people who are in for bagel slicing accidents.
Interesting. Well, I want to talk about one of the stories you write about in your article, and this is I think it was probably the most well-known article about food allergies in recent years.
The peanut butter kiss,
mm-hmm. Right. And you can tell us more about it, but this was the girl who had kissed her boyfriend, mm-hmm. and died, and it was reported widely, at least, that the reason she died was because she had an allergic reaction to peanuts, and he had eaten peanut butter earlier mm-hmm. in the day. Can mm-hmm. you tell us about that story?
That girl, her name was Christina DeForge, and she was Canadian. And what happened was she had an asthma attack, actually. She had been hanging out at a party with some friends. People were smoking, which, I mean, of course, smoke is an asthma trigger. And people were also smoking pot at the party. Christina had smoked pot. She had an asthma attack, and she passed away. And it was, I mean, tragic and unfortunate. I mean, it's always tragic when a young person passes away. But before they knew the actual cause of death, every major American media outlet reported on this peanut butter kiss. And allegedly, Christina had this had this attack of anaphylactic shock because of kissing her boyfriend, who had eaten a peanut butter sandwich. Hours and hours and hours before. And it was really just a case of people jumping to conclusions too quickly. So absolutely everybody covered the story when it happened, and nobody really listened to the coroner, who was saying, well, you know, we really don't have the cause of death in yet. And then 2 months later, the coroner published his report saying, you know, this was an asthma attack, not peanut butter anaphylactic shock. And, you know, nobody covered that.
Where did the idea of the peanut butter come from, then?
I just don't know. Hmm. I just don't know. I do know there was a very lurid story in People magazine about the peanut butter kiss, and I read the story and I was terrified. I was absolutely terrified. After reading the story. And then it turned out that a lot of the background and the facts and the context for the story were provided to the reporters by the Food Allergy and Anaphylaxis Network, which is a nonprofit based out of D.C.
Okay, let's go back to the phones now. And here's a call from Patrick in Oconomowoc. Hi, Patrick. You're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi there. Crossed my mind when I heard one of your previous callers saying that yes, she believes that you can get an anaphylactic shock reaction through just smelling the peanut odor through the air. And it just had crossed my mind that, well, now, I'm allergic to poison ivy. Now, I may be comparing apples and oranges here, or okay, peanuts and ivy, but if I, on a humid, hot summer day, if I can't even come within a few feet of poison ivy, I'll actually get blisters from that. I'm quite allergic to poison ivy. And I was just wondering if it's possible that a person, I guess, if they're sufficiently allergic to peanuts, might actually have some kind of a reaction like that by just smelling, or I don't know what the smell of peanuts is, consists of, although I have my doubts that it would be the part of a peanut that would cause the anaphylactic shock. I just was wondering if that was a possibility, like with me and the poison ivy, although I'm sure with the poison ivy it's the resin actually mixing with the humid air. And, does the peanut, the thing that causes the anaphylactic shock with the peanut, is that like a protein or something that would not be actually present in the smell?
That's an excellent question. We don't have a single case of somebody smelling a peanut and then going into anaphylactic shock and dying. It doesn't happen, and it's not really physically possible. As far as the proteins go, food allergies are pretty difficult to understand, and the science of food allergies is relatively new. The idea that an allergy would be an immune system response only dates to 1908. So we really have not been studying it for very long relative to how long we've been studying other things like, you know, orthopedics. We've been studying for a lot longer. So the way that an allergy works, a food allergy works, is you you ingest a food, and one of the hundreds of proteins in that food sort of conflicts with your immune system. So your immune system malfunctions and looks at this particular protein as an invader, and then it attacks that invader. And then you'll have an allergic response. Okay, so it might be nausea, it might be vomiting, it might be a runny nose, an itchy mouth, hives, flushing, wheezing, or at the very extreme end, anaphylactic shock. But again, the anaphylactic shock is extremely rare. And all of the other stuff, it's very uncomfortable, it's miserable, it can be quite severe, it can sometimes require a trip to the emergency room. But it's mostly treatable.
I wanted to ask you, we've certainly been getting a lot of calls challenging the information you gave about peanut allergies being inhaled. You said it would have to be, the peanuts would have to be ground, and you'd have to put it into a spray device that would, you know, spray it at the person's nose.
Mm-hmm.
Where did that information come from, your idea that is the case?
That comes from the medical literature, as well as a conversation I had with an allergist at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia.
Okay, so you definitely talked to people about that. Our callers are certainly saying the opposite there anecdotally. Do you have any way to reconcile the discrepancy in that perception?
We all have associations with smells. I mean, smells are incredibly profound. Like, they're linked to memory. And in the case of allergies and allergic reactions, I think that the smells are linked to negative associations. So if you're smelling something that you are allergic to, it reminds you of being allergic to that, and, you know, you feel unpleasant. As far as when something, now cooking is a little different than just smelling something. Okay, so when something is being cooked, the particles are actually going up in the air. So if you're allergic to shrimp, say, and you stick your head over a wok where a shrimp is being cooked, like, it, you know, obviously you're going to inhale some shrimp and, you know, feel bad about that.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's obviously something that people feel really passionately about.
I know, it's amazing.
And I wonder what makes it such a hot button issue. Is it that the people who are allergic to these things don't feel that they are being taken care of, or, you know, in terms of someone else who's allergic to poison ivy, you know, why are people so passionate about food allergies?
I think it might have to do with food allergies being ignored for so long. And also, they make you miserable. My own food allergies are really unpleasant, and I hate having to sort of make the caveat whenever I go out to dinner, or whenever I go to somebody's house for lunch, or, you know, whenever I order something in the restaurant, I say, well, you know, is there crab meat in this? Because, you know, I'm allergic to crab meat. And, I mean, it's kind of a pain. And for a very long time, people didn't believe that food allergies were real. If you had a child with food allergies, people would sort of try and feed your kid something that they were allergic to just to, like, prove that your kid wasn't allergic to it.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah, which is cruel. People are very frustrated. People have food allergies, and people who are the parents of kids with food allergies, they get very frustrated.
Well, it'll be interesting to see where the cultural mood goes next.
Yeah, very much so.
Let's take a call from Norman in Wausau. Welcome, Norman. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Morning.
I'm a retired physician, and at one time I did a fair amount of allergy work, and I want to corroborate your story on the cooking, because I had one patient who was extremely sensitive to fish, and if he could smell that fish cooking, he would get respiratory symptoms with almost within a matter of seconds. And so we had to caution him and have his EpiPen and so forth. The second thing that happened that's very unusual is my brother drank a large quantity of orange juice, whole squeezed orange juice, and in the middle of the night he had a reaction that he had to go to the emergency room. He couldn't breathe. His face swelled up, his lips and everything. And we didn't know what it was. And then about 3 weeks later, he attacked the orange juice again, and the same thing happened. This time we went back, and we realized that's what it was. Now, the interesting thing is, if he squeezes an orange, just the pulp, without the rind, it's not a problem. But if it's the whole squeezed orange juice like you buy with the rind in, so there's some compound in there that he is allergic to. Now, what it is, I don't know, and I don't have any way of proving it. But certainly you can get reactions from a number of foods, and some of these can be almost life-threatening. I would say, in his case, if he wouldn't have got any treatment, he probably would have died.
Well, I'm glad the treatment was available, Norman, and thank you for calling with your stories about food allergies. Meredith Broussard?
Thanks for calling in with that story. In the case of something like an allergy to something in the rind of the orange, like, it's so hard to figure out exactly what you're allergic to. And, I mean, in this case, like, it could be the rind, or it could actually be something that the rind was treated with in the orchard. Heaven knows our food is incredibly processed and treated nowadays. I mean, there are pesticides, there are wax. Fruits and vegetables are coated with waxes and preservatives. And every food contains hundreds of proteins. So it's really extraordinarily difficult to diagnose exactly what you're allergic to. And our allergy tests are not that good, honestly. Skin tests and blood tests are what we have. And as far as blood tests, we don't have information on exactly how much of this allergic reaction unit can be in your blood before you will have an allergic reaction. So we don't have any information on what is a threshold dose to cause an allergic reaction. Or in the skin tests, when they prick your skin and put a little bit of the thing that you're allergic to into your skin, and if you get a hive, then, you know, we think that you're allergic to it. But it doesn't correlate to to actual allergic reaction when you ingest something. Hmm. So you can be pricked with a peanut and get a giant hive, but I mean you cannot have anything really disastrous happen when you eat a peanut. But that's incredibly counterintuitive.
So how do they test for food allergies? Is it basically a crapshoot then? If you have a reaction, you're allergic?
Well, we have these skin tests, we have these blood tests, and we also have something called the double-blind placebo-controlled food challenge.
Okay, really quick. You could explain it. We're running out of time.
Okay, well, that's a taste test that you take in an allergist's office. And so you eat it, and then the doctor watches you to see what happens.
Oh. That sounds a little scary.
I mean, you're in the doctor's office. You're
right.
In the hospital. So it's really,
okay.
I mean, you're fine. Like, you're under medical care.
Hmm.
It is scary. It's horrible to have a reaction. But, you know, you're going to be fine, pretty much.
Well, Meredith Broussard, thank you so much for being with us this hour.
Okay, thank you.
Appreciate it. Have a great day.
You too. Take care.
Thank you. We're talking with Meredith Broussard this hour, and she wrote the article, Everyone's Gone Nuts, The Exaggerated Threat of Food Allergies. She wrote that for the January issue of Harper's Magazine. We thank her for joining us this hour, and to Carmen Jackson for producing this hour, and Keisha Mabra for on-air production. I'm Veronica Rickert, sitting in today for Kathleen Dunn. There's more talk ahead here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.